You're listening to UK Health Radio. I'm Dr. Dean Mitchell, and this is The Smartest Doctor in the Room, where real medicine meets real answers. Each episode, I bring you honest conversations with some of the brightest minds in health and medicine. Let's get started. Toxic mold exposure in the home is dangerous to your health. I see patients every week in my practice who are suffering from the effects of toxic mold. And in many cases, they were living in a home where they didn't even know mold was present. That's why I recommend to patients who suspect they are ill, possibly from toxic mold exposure, to obtain a test from Immunolytics, a company that specializes in mold detection with simple mold plates for your home or office. The mold plates are put in various rooms of your home and then left open for an hour. They are then closed up and you observe them for 5 days. If the mold plates show growth, you can send them back to Immunolytics and the company will analyze them and interpret the results for you. Please see the link in the show notes to order your mold plates from Immunolytics and use the code Smartest Doc to get a 5% discount. Today's podcast will be, are cancer detecting blood tests ready for prime time? You know, the holy grail of medicine would be to have a simple blood test that detected cancers early enough to treat the cancer definitively, or at least to save the person's life before it became advanced. Up until now, no such blood test really exists. PSAs for prostate cancer screening have their problems. Something called CA-125 test for ovarian cancer. Again, I'm not an expert in this area, but I believe it's mostly used to follow patients who've had ovarian cancer versus really early screening or detecting it. And the most dangerous cancers like pancreatic cancer, no such screening tests is available. My guest today is Dr. Eric Klein. He's the distinguished scientist at Grail. This is a company that now has a multi-cancer early detection test available called Galleri. Dr. Klein was formerly a professor at the Cleveland Clinic, one of the most esteemed hospital centers in the country, and chair of the Urology and Kidney Institute. So I'm really pleased to welcome Dr. Eric Klein to the podcast.
Thanks. Great to be here. And the answer to your opening question is MCED ready for prime time is an emphatic yes.
Okay. Well, we're going to put that to the test today.
Fine. Very good.
Okay. So look, I want to start here, Dr. Klein. You know, cancer, I don't know, maybe you could explain a little bit better because your test also, I mean, it covers so many organs. And, you know, again, as I said just a minute ago, you know, we always think of cancer is so unique as each tissue, whether it's the skin or it's an internal organ, is very different. So maybe can you explain a little bit for our listeners what this test is showing and why it is very valuable or unique?
Sure. Cancers, when they grow and when they become aggressive by virtue of a high mitotic rate, by invading underlying tissues, by turning on something called the angiogenic switch, where they induce blood vessel formation. We know that those are signs of biologic aggressiveness. And we know that such cancers spill cancer-related DNA into the bloodstream. So the major breakthrough in this whole field has been the ability to use next-generation sequencing, which is the same technology that was used to sequence the human genome, to be able to pick out in the sea of normal DNA that's in our bloodstream, the few strands of cancer-related DNA that will be in our bloodstream. And the target we look at is called methylation. And so in order to understand that, you have to think about high school chemistry and remember what a methyl group is. It's a carbon atom and three hydrogen atoms. And methylation is a normal biologic process. Normal cells use methylation to turn genes on and off. So that, for example, and this is an oversimplification, but it's helpful to understand it this way, a liver cell turns on all the genes that make it a liver cell and turn off all the genes that would make it a kidney cell or a lung cell. And a kidney cell likewise turns on all the genes that make it a kidney cell and turns off everything else. It turns out that cancer cells of almost any sort, doesn't matter where they arise from, uses the same biologic process, but not to turn itself into a specific organ, but to turn itself into a cancer. And what cancer does with methylation at a very gross level is it turns on all the genes that allow it to grow in an unrestrained fashion and turn off all the genes that hold growth back. And that is the signal that we're looking at. And so in the bloodstream, we can identify differentially methylated DNA that represents a fingerprint that this DNA is from a cancer. And the other interesting thing is that even as cancers evolve, they maintain that background normal methylation pattern that labels them as a liver cell or a kidney cell. So, in addition to detecting a signal, presence or absence of cancer, or at least the presence of cancer, we can't 100% rule out the presence of cancer. But when we detect a cancer signal, we can also predict with better than 90% accuracy what kind of cancer it is and where it comes from, which really facilitates an efficient diagnostic evaluation.
Right, because it gets very we're going to get into that, how, once something like this is detected, the other steps that are involved, which typically have to be, imaging, invasive procedures, et cetera. But I want to go back to something basic, because like what you're saying also too, and I'm really trying to go back to my medical school days. I'm trying to picture a little bit, for our listeners, what we call histology or pathology. One of the things we learn in medical school in the second, well, the first year we learned something called histology, where we look at normal cells under a microscope, and a kidney cell and a liver cell and a heart cell all look different. I never thought about this before, but this is the question I wanted to ask you. I'm trying to go with this. So if I were to look at histologically, looking at the cell structure of a liver or a kidney cell, but typically, I would think that internally the cells are similar. Is that correct? It's just
Well,
they.
at some levels they are, and at some levels they aren't. So one fundamental hallmark of cancer is dysregulation of gene expression. And so you can have DNA that looks relatively normal, but is dysregulated because the genes that hold back growth are turned off, and the genes that promote growth, which normally are closely regulated, are turned on. So that's the difference that we are
Okay,
detecting.
what I'm trying to understand, and again, I'm a doctor, and but I'm trying to simplify this not only for the listeners but for myself as well too, because obviously you're a super expert. But the DNA in a liver cell, I mean, because we tend to think, what your DNA is your DNA. So the DNA in your liver cell, is it the same DNA as in your kidney cell?
Yes, the base pair sequence is the same. That's
They're the
what you were born
same, right? Because
with.
those are your cells.
But
So.
which genes are turned on and which genes are turned off are different.
Okay, so again, I'm gonna like do a little improvisation here, but so let's just say, it's funny because I had some experts on recently, one on Parkinson's, believe it or not, who says 70% of Parkinson's is due to environmental toxins, which is pretty amazing. But I think that we, I think as we go on, we're gonna realize too, a lot of cancers are, as you say, epigenetic. That's the word for meaning it's you have certain genes, and yes, you might be predisposed, maybe because of your methylation, but maybe it depends on what you've been exposed to. If you've been exposed to passive smoke exposure, or your groundwater is polluted. So again, just to get a little before we get into some other stuff, so that if a person theoretically was exposed, let's say they worked in a dry cleaning business and there were all these kind of toxins there, that would could cause damage, let's say specifically to a liver cell, and that liver cell's DNA would now be changed compared to a healthy person who didn't work in the cleaning store. And that abnormal DNA that's leaked out of that liver cell now, that's what this Galleria test is picking up.
So we can't tie back the signal that we're looking at to a specific environmental exposure
No, I know that, but I'm saying,
or
but what is
genetic
the.
predisposition. But we can tell, this test can tell using next generation
Yeah.
sequencing, looking at the pattern of methylation across the whole genome, all the DNA in the cell, if there's cancer DNA present. And the fundamental scientific discovery here was something that you're kind of getting at, which is we've always thought that the mutations in a liver cancer are different than a kidney cancer, and they are. But what we have discovered is that in addition to that, there's a shared signal that's common to many, many kinds of cancers. And that's what we can detect with this technology.
What is the shared signal?
The
What is
shared signal are changes in methylation patterns, what genes are turned on and what genes are turned off that are common to many cancers. So there are certain genes that drive cell growth. A liver cancer needs those, a kidney cancer needs those, a lung cancer needs
right.
those, regardless of what other mutations might have started the process. In order to
Okay.
grow, they have to change this cellular machinery to allow them to grow, and that's what we're measuring.
Okay. All right, I want to talk about
We're
this.
not measuring specific mutations. We're not measuring genetic predisposition to cancer. It's if there's a cancer present, what is the methylation pattern? And that tells us that the cancer's present. And then is there also a methylation pattern that tells us what the cancer origin is, where it's from, what kind of cancer it is?
So you can tell that. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I know you may already know from listening to my podcast that I specialize in treating patients with toxic mold exposure. It's become a serious problem for many years as we deal with the hurricanes and floods throughout the country. You know, even simple bathroom water leaks from a toilet in your home over time can contribute to mold buildup. I can help patients that suffer from the symptoms of toxic mold, but I also rely on the patients getting their current residence inspected so they are not continually being exposed. My go-to person for mold exposure is Joe Reese. Joe is a certified mold inspector with decades of experience. He is super thorough and gives you a straightforward assessment and tells you whether it's safe to live in your home or if there is mold. I should know. I used Joe when I moved to my new home 4 years ago. Fortunately, when I moved in, I smelled an unusual odor in my basement, and I immediately called Joe. He came over with his instruments, and he found the problem. Afterwards, I had remediation, and the problem was solved. Joe does inspections all throughout the country. He welcomes calls to his cell phone at 908-451-4592. You can also reach him by email at JPR Consultants 7929 at gmail.com. Remember, mold in your home is not a good thing, but thankfully it's a problem that can be fixed. Let's go on to, I think, something very important. And this just becomes the bottleneck, obviously, for your company, for the work that's involved. Again, I mentioned, you know, my friend Dr. Neil Sasko introduced me to this and fortunately hooked me up with you guys. And I know he's doing a lot of testing. But the question is, who should be tested? Now,
Yes.
I was looking at the pamphlet and it says everyone over 50 should be screened with this test for occult cancers. You know, today we know women are typically screened with mammographies. Usually, I think now it's gotten lower. I think starting at age 45. Colon cancer, again, because the cancers are appearing earlier. I think the
Yes.
recommendations are still screening at 60 and
No,
above for colonoscopies.
it's actually 50, and
Are they lowering it to 50?
some
Okay.
organizations are recommending 45 now.
Right. And as you well know, being in this field, this is such a tricky thing because it really comes down to statistics.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
The station that makes you feel good.
It turns out, if you look at the epidemiologic risk factors for cancer in the general population, people think of, oh, it's smoking, or it's obesity, or it's new onset diabetes, or it's BRCA carriers. In fact, it's age.
I was about to say, it's age, right?
It's age. And starting at age 50, your risk of cancer goes up by about 6 or 7% for every year you age. So we're trying to solve a problem at the population level. Think about this. In the United States, we screen for five cancers: breast, colon, cervical, lung, and prostate. All of them have been shown to reduce mortality, which is terrific. Despite that, we still lose 600,000 people a year, more than 600,000 people a year due to cancer. Despite these effective screening tests, only 14% of all cancers in the U.S. are detected by screening. And when
how many percentage?
14%.
Wow, very low.
Only 14%. Okay. And when you account for lack of perfect adherence to these tests, more than 80% of deaths due to cancer in the U.S. come from cancers that we don't screen for. So what the problem we're trying to solve is not an individual problem, not someone with a BRCA mutation. Do they have cancer at present or not? Because we know they're at higher risk. Not that MCED use is inappropriate in that population, but we're focused on a much broader problem, which is cancer at the population level, losing 600,000 people a year. And if you look at the statistics worldwide, cancer is predicted to double in incidence in the next 15 years. And as you've already alluded to, cancer is skewing to younger and younger individuals. And we don't have screening tests for most of the cancers that people die from: ovarian, pancreatic, liver, all of those. So that's the problem we're trying to solve. And that's why we're focused on age.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. I was going to ask you the next question, because again, I saw in an article in New York Times, which we'll get into a little bit more after too. It's interesting whether, you know, because again, I'm also looking, I'm not a primary care doctor, but again, as my friend Dr. Soskal is, you know, again, I mean, sometimes I guess you're going to bring that up. And if somebody's over 50, you know, you give them that option to do this, and we'll talk about the cost and everything. But the other thing where I know they've done studies, which makes a lot of sense, like, you know, Grail has looked at, the company has looked at firefighters.
Yes.
I would think that people that, again, worked in certain industries could be very high risk. I also wonder, and I always say this too, you know, family history is so important. I think it's so overlooked. People tend to forget. We are the DNA of our mother and father. I don't care what you think. And you may look at your parents and say, I'm never going to look like them. I'm never going to act like them. Sorry, you have their DNA, some kind of combination. So if there is a strong family history of cancer, you think that this type of test, again, for a primary doc, let's say they bring it up to their patient, and let's say the patient is 50, and says, I don't know, do I need this test? And then, you know, the doctor looks at it and says, oh my God, look at, you know, your mother, your uncle, this and that too. They all died of some form of cancer. Yes, you really need this test. I mean, would you say that would be extra supportive?
Yeah, that's a great use case. People who have risk factors over and above age. But you have to understand the difference between absolute risk and relative risk at the population level. So when you ask the question, of all the cancers in the population in the U.S., what is the number one driving factor? It's age. It's not family history. It's not smoking. It's not obesity. It's not BRCA carriers. Now, having said that, individuals who have those risk factors, in addition to age, are at elevated risk. To me, as a clinician who treated cancer patients for 35 years, it makes lots of sense to use this kind of technology for those patients, in addition to people who are at average risk of cancer. So we recommend colonoscopy for people who are at average risk of colon cancer. You don't have to have anything special other than being over 50 or over 45 to have a recommendation for a colonoscopy, because you're at risk because
of cancer. Let me ask you a theoretical, and again, this is out of the box. 35-year-old guy comes to the doctor's office, coming for their annual checkup, whatever. And, you know, he's relatively young. And again, you said age, he's still way under the screening of 50, but maybe an uncle, a father died of colon cancer. Would you say, or we just don't have the data yet, saying a person like this should get the Galleri test?
You know, it depends on how impactful
Worried?
their family history is. Okay. If you have a grandfather who had colon cancer, let me talk about prostate cancer because that's what I did, and I know the data a little better there. So we've looked at this. A family history of prostate cancer increases your risk of prostate cancer. That's well established. It's one of the most highly heritable cancers. But it depends on what relative you have. So if you had a grandfather who had prostate cancer at age 65 and you're 35 or 40 or 50, that probably doesn't affect your risk very much. But if your father had it and his brother had it, and you're 50 or even 45, you should probably get screened for prostate cancer. So we don't understand the genetics of many other cancers quite as well as we do for prostate cancer. But yes, I think you're making the case that someone with additional risk factors, even if they're below 50, is at a certain absolute risk of cancer and could consider using a Galleri test to be screened. Now, whether that's 35 or whether it's a 45-year-old woman who is a BRCA carrier and a non-smoker, does it make does it make sense to start MCED screening and mammography at that age? You can make that argument statistically. Let me just
No,
interject
sure.
one other thing. It's very important for people to understand that MCED testing by blood is not intended to replace our standard of care screening.
Well, I was going to
It's
ask you that. It might up your alley. So let me ask you
It's
this. Like Mayor
intended to
Giul
be additive to it. Yeah.
yeah, former Mayor Giuliani, it was very interesting. I remember back in the day when he was, I think, still mayor, he was diagnosed with prostate cancer. And I think his
Yes.
father died in his 50s from prostate cancer. And he
Yes.
was treated, I think, with the pellets at Mount Sinai, and he's still going strong. How does this Galleri on the prostate, for example, compare to the PSA test? Would they be used in conjunction? Is one better than the other?
Yeah, they need to be used in conjunction. And here's why. It's a biologic explanation. And this is also important for breast cancer. As I mentioned, the signal that Galleri measures in the bloodstream, this cell-free DNA that's released by cancers, is closely associated with biologic processes that we know drive cancer aggressiveness. So for Galleri to detect a signal in the bloodstream, the tumor has to be of a certain level of aggressiveness to be able to spill DNA into the bloodstream. Well, really early stage low-grade prostate cancer doesn't do that. And really early small hormone receptor positive breast cancer doesn't do that because they're not aggressive cancers. PSA and mammography detect those cancers very well. MCED technology does not detect them very well, because there's no signal to
Now,
detect.
that's a very good point. But
So
how is it
that's
an early detection test, though, then, if it's having to wait till the tumor is large?
it's not a matter of size, it's a matter of the biologic ability to shed cancer into the bloodstream, which
Right.
is not directly related to size. And so more aggressive cancers like ovarian and pancreatic cancer start become aggressive very early in their natural history and shed DNA early on. And so our studies have shown that Galleri can detect about, has sensitivity of about 80% for those cancers and about 60% for stage one and two pancreatic and ovarian cancers. And in our latest big study, the Pathfinder 2 study of 35,000 people, it can detect 75% of the 12 cancers that are responsible for about two-thirds of cancer deaths in the US.
How does it compare to like Cologuard for colon cancer? I'm just curious.
Yeah, it's not a direct comparison because
Okay, but
Cologuard only screens for colon cancer,
right, but so that's what I'm saying.
and
If we were
it
focused
did
on
that.
colon cancer.
Yes. So the positive predictive value of Galleri far exceeds standard of care screening tests. So the positive predictive value of Galleri, meaning what's the likelihood that if I have a cancer signal detected, a positive MCED test, what's the likelihood that I really have cancer? It's over 60%. And in some studies at Mayo and Dana-Farber, it's been as high as 77%.
But the Cologuard is about
Cologuard,
nine over 90%.
it's in the 80% for, in the high 80% for colon cancer only.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm just talking
Right?
about colon cancer
So
right now,
MCED,
too.
right. Okay. The second, the, no, that's not correct. That's sensitivity. positive predictive value for Cologuard and other screening tests down around 10%. And mammography is the best example here. The positive predictive value of a positive mammogram in a woman at average risk is 5%. What that means is, of every 20 women with a positive mammogram, 19 do not have cancer, and yet all 19 have a diagnostic evaluation. The positive predictive value of Galleri, let's say, is 60, in the mid 60%, 62% in our latest study, which means 12 out of 20 people have a positive Galleri test actually have cancer and only 8 unnecessary workups. And that's true for colonoscopy, for Cologuard, for FIT testing, for cervical cancer screening. Their positive predictive values are 10% or lower.
If you've been following the podcast, you may know I practice holistic functional medicine and immunology. In fact, at Mitchell Medical Group, we've been treating chronic fatigue patients for 3 decades. It's critical in this work to have a trusted pharmacy that can compound medications for our sensitive patients' needs. ITC Pharmacy has been our go-to pharmacy the entire time. They can make medications ranging from thyroid hormones to dye-free medications for all of our highly sensitive, even allergic patients. If you or your holistic doctor are looking for these very specific patient medications, you can contact ITC at 888-349-5453. They have licenses throughout the country and can have medications delivered right to your doorsteps. My patients have been so pleased with their service, and you will be too.
So you have to be careful. Excuse me, you have to be careful not to confuse sensitivity when a cancer is present to positive predictive value in someone that you're testing for cancer. They're two different numbers.
What's more important in your estimation, positive predictive value?
No, they're both important. When you evaluate a screening test, you need to look at all the performance characteristics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm kind of letting you find this.
Higher sensitivity is better. And a higher positive predictive value is better because you want to find cancers, obviously.
And you want
the latest in the latest study
validated.
In the latest study we did, about 79% of the cancers. Let's look at the exact number. In the latest study we did, again, Pathfinder 2, adding Galleri over standard of care, or comparing it to those who only got standard of care in a non-randomized way, tripled the number of cancers that were detected. And a little over half were at stage 1 and 2, and 70% were stage 1 to 3, meaning they were eligible for curative therapy, right? Non-metastatic disease.
Mm-hmm.
When you add that to a positive predictive value of over 60%, or in some hands as high as 77%, you can, I think, get a sense of urgency that if you have someone who has a positive signal, that you shouldn't ignore it and you should refer them for a diagnostic evaluation.
Okay. You know, you lead me to this another very important question too. You know, one of the dangers of any kind of screening is that you can get false positives.
Yes.
Which unfortunately induces tremendous anxiety, can sometimes lead to more invasive procedures on people, would put them at risk.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What would happen, before we get into some numbers, let's say a patient comes back positive on the Galleri test for a bile duct cancer, which is also a very internal, dangerous one. It's so close to so many organs.
For what kind of cancer?
For bile duct cancer.
Bile duct cancer, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's a kind of a bad one. It's like pancreatic. It's deep in the body. It can spread easily. I mean, I've seen cases, you know, where people have had that, which unfortunately are usually very advanced before they're ever clinically picked up. But what would happen at that point? Let's say a patient gets, the general doctor orders this Galleri test, comes back positive for the bile duct cancer. They then have to go see like a gastro-oncologist or somebody, because then the work has to begin, whether it's biopsies or imaging. Yeah.
So let's put it in the context of things that people are familiar with. Okay, let's say a woman has another screening test, a mammogram, and there's an abnormality on the mammogram. So that doesn't prove that there's cancer. They need a diagnostic evaluation by the appropriate specialist. Let's say you got a positive Cologuard. You need a diagnostic evaluation by the appropriate specialist with colonoscopy. The same is true with Galleri. It's a screening test. So you need a diagnostic evaluation by the appropriate expert. And for a particular, a bile duct cancer, first of all, the sensitivity of Galleri for bile duct cancers is very high. It's around 90%.
Oh, wow.
And you would have an imaging study of the biliary tract. That could be a CT scan. It could be an MRCP. It could be, you know, something else. But yeah, that's how you would make the diagnosis. If you get a Galleri test that's positive for colon cancer, you have a colonoscopy. If you get a Galleri test that's positive for kidney cancer, you get a CT of the kidney. If it's for head and neck cancer, you would be referred to an otolaryngologist to have a laryngoscopy and exam and perhaps a CT scan.
Okay. I was looking somewhere too, maybe it was the New York Times article, they mentioned, or maybe it was on your handout, might have been on the Galleri handout. They would, you know, it was referring to it was on your handout. It was referring to they had about a little over 2,000 patients were tested. And this is pretty interesting, actually. Of these over 2,000 patients, less than 1%, about 17 patients, had a cancer signal. And then it said 15 of these patients.
Not sure where you're getting that number. So let me tell you about our clinical development program. We have 9 clinical trials totaling almost 400,000 patients. So we've tested a lot more than 2,000 patients.
Yeah.
The cancer signal detected rate in across all our studies, if you look at all of them, is right around 1%, which is roughly what the population incidence of cancer is in the U.S.
Right.
Yeah. What you may be referring to is the false positive rate.
Well, yeah. I'm just saying, this was a clinical summary. It comes in the packet that I got from one of the representatives.
Yeah.
And it said this was from Journal of Primary Care and Community Health, implementation of the MCD.
Oh, this was the Mayo Clinic experience. This was a study done.
It was from the Mayo Clinic, correct.
So this is.
Right, that's what I was just saying. This is what I was. Yes, sir. I was just reading off what they said. Out of the 2,244 patients, 17 patients, because in red, had a cancer signal detected. Correct. Of those 17 patients, 15 underwent evaluation.
Right.
And it said out of those 15, 11, which is like, you know, so it was pretty good, like 73% had cancer.
Exactly. Positive
patients,
73%.
26%, yes. I still feel like that's a little high, had no cancer. They were ruled out.
Yes.
So that's what I'm referring to.
Yes, that's correct. Now, the overall, here's the important thing.
Yeah.
The overall false positive rate is measured in the population of everybody who was tested. So it's 26 out of 2,200 who were false positives.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So the overall false positive rate is under 0.5%, meaning that fewer than 1 in 200 tested people will have a false positive.
So
Whereas the
basically, you're saying, and this is important, I mean, this is the bottom line for people. You do this test, your likelihood of a false positive is pretty darn
very,
low.
very low, very,
Yeah,
very low.
I think just what's so important, because
Under half a
again, what
percent.
gets people crazy is to do a test and then
Yes.
going down the rabbit hole of a million other tests and then
Yes.
just like being, frightened and nervous and pretty
Well,
horrible experience.
we've studied this pretty carefully again in our clinical studies in the what we call the intended use population, people 50 to 79 in ambulatory medical clinics being screened. And here's what we've learned. We've measured anxiety using validated instruments of patient-reported outcomes. And what we see is the same pattern we see with mammography and colonoscopy. You have a little anxiety when the test is done. You have some anxiety waiting for the results. Individuals who get negative results, they go right back to baseline. Individuals who have positive results get slightly more anxiety until their evaluation is completed. And people who are diagnosed with cancer, get a little anxiety. What we've also learned, though, is that there seems to be a drop in worry about cancer in individuals who have been tested and who were negative. So that's very interesting. It's like you're
Yeah,
relieved,
that's
worried
obviously
about it.
nice and peace of mind. Actually,
Yes.
that leads to one of the questions I had. So how much time can somebody have peace of mind? I mean, look, I know it's all relative, but someone does
Yep.
this test, can they say, well, I should be good for the next year? Can I be good for the next 5 years?
Yeah,
Do we
it's
have
a great
any
question.
answers on that?
Yes, we do. We have looked at this. An individual who has a negative test. It has a reduced likelihood of being diagnosed with cancer in the subsequent 1 to 2 years
That's it,
by
though. I
around,
mean,
that's it. Why is that it? The answer is yes, that's it. Why is that it? Because new cancers can arise periodically. And we have data on this also. We did a big study with
right.
the American Cancer Society where they had blood samples in several hundred thousand people that went back as long as 8 years prior to the diagnosis of cancer. And so we looked at what is the average time that you see a signal come up in someone who's diagnosed with cancer, how long before they're
No.
clinically diagnosed
Right.
for, across all cancers. So if you were screening a whole population for all cancers, it's about 1 year. For the most aggressive
The reason
cancers,
I'm bringing that up is that it never made sense to me. I mean, look, there's medicine and there's statistics. It's like with colonoscopies. Someone gets a colonoscopy at 60 and or 50, whatever it is, and they're clean. And then the doctor says, "Oh, you don't need another one for 10 years." And I'm saying to myself, "Geez, how do you know 2 years from now something doesn't arrive de novo?" So like that 10 years thing, that was just like, is that like just
It's not empiric. No,
not.
there are good studies that have looked at what happens to people with a negative colonoscopy, and it's the same thing. If you have a negative colonoscopy, your risk of having colon cancer goes down substantially in the next
Even though your
several years.
age is increasing?
Yes. And it's because you've been screened and because the development of colon cancers is relatively slow because they start in polyps and it takes time to grow. This is called sojourn time. And so it's pretty well established for colon cancer. But you're right, there are some people who develop what are called interval cancers that come between that. And we see that in breast cancer too. Triple negative breast cancer and more aggressive cancers tend to come up quicker. That's why we think blood testing once a year makes sense for that. Just like the idea of a non-invasive Cologuard test every 3 years, also makes sense probably.
Would
And
they,
certainly for
what?
patients at high risk. So let's talk about this idea of developing a blood test for each single cancer. That's certainly possible. There are blood tests on the market now that screen for colon cancer. Here's the problem with that. There are two problems with it. One is if you're unlucky enough to get cancer, you can't pick what cancer you get. And all of the prior screening studies have shown that even if you're adherent to guidelines, screening for lung cancer, screening for colon cancer, you're far more likely to be diagnosed with a different cancer than the one you were screened for in the course of your lifetime. Second, and this has been shown in the PLCO study, prostate lung cancer ovarian study. When you're screened individually for multiple individual cancers, the false positives rate are additive. So in the PLCO trial, after 10 screening rounds, men were 50% likely to have a false positive. I mean, you had a 1 in 2 chance of having a false positive. In women, it was about 40%. Whereas with an MCED test in Galleri, the false positive rate isn't additive. The false positive rate is fixed at 0.5% for dozens of cancers. So it's a far more efficient way of doing it, and it minimizes false positives while maximizing the number of cancers detected. And that's the value at the population level.
I never thought about this. I mean, this would be obviously extremely unfortunate or unlucky. Is it ever like a test like this too will pick up multiple cancers in a patient where a person has, or does that just mean it's metastatic? I mean, let's say if something came back and say, oh my God, this person's got, kidney and pancreatic cancer, I mean, would that
It
really be a
could.
unifying thing, or could they literally have two different cancers going on?
I'd like to take a moment to let my listeners know that my new book, Conquering Candida, is now available on Amazon in paperback and ebook. If you believe you suffer from Candida, this is the first book in 50 years since the original book, The Yeast Connection by Dr. William Crook, to give credence to this underdiagnosed and undertreated condition. If you also want to understand gut health and the microbiome, I also believe you will enjoy this book. I do appreciate if you read this book to rate it on Amazon and provide your comments and a review.
They could have two different cancers, and there would be two different methylation patterns. There would be one common methylation pattern, cancer DNA present, but the other fingerprint, like we like to call it, would be different. One would be labeled whatever the first cancer is, and the
Does
other
that
would be the
happen?
second.
I can almost never hear of
It's
that.
very rare.
Is that because the immune system's like dealing with one thing at a time or something? I mean, what?
No, or it could be that, you get some aggressive cancer and you just happen to have a small kidney mass that turns out to be a low-grade renal cancer or something like that.
Why is it not FDA approved? That it's funny. What surprised me also is that normally I thought for a doctor to be able to even order a test, it had to be FDA approved.
Well, it will take them to review our application. You have to apply to the FDA. So we have been in, this is an active process. We have been in discussion with the FDA for several years about what the evidence base would be necessary for them to make a judgment about approving MCED testing as safe and effective. That's their mandate by law, is a test safe and effective. And that application process is just about completed. We will have the final module in the first quarter of next year. And we anticipate that they will take about a year to evaluate that, and we will be the first MCED test to get FDA approval.
Exciting. As we're kind of wrapping up, let me ask you, if patients are interested in getting this test, but their doctor doesn't offer it, does Grail have a site that people can go to and
Yes.
find a doctor that offers this? And can you explain to me? I believe it's out of pocket now, right? It's not covered by insurance.
So it's covered by TRICARE, which is the military insurer.
Really? Oh, wow.
Yes. And some other small insurance companies have done some pilots, but the big ones have not covered it yet. There are two potential ways to do what you have suggested. One is to go to Galleri.com and log on there, and we contract with providers who are fully versed in the use of Galleri, who will do a brief interview with you to be sure that you're eligible and identify any special risk factors and order it for you. And yes, that's self-pay. There are a number of digital health providers also, like Hims and Hers
Oh, they're offering it now
and
too? Really?
Everywell and Foundation, not Foundation, what's Mark Hyman's organization?
Let's just say to a doctor who maybe who's interested in doing this for his patients, but maybe he's really not that well versed or expertise, almost like genetic counseling. Who could, let's say, a patient gets this test, and especially if they do it on a digital platform,
So,
who would they be speaking to advise them? Because again, there's gonna be a lot of anxiety there if they have a positive test. How
well,
is that?
we so if a clinician wants to order Galleri, We don't just let them start ordering it. We
You don't.
have, we have an important and robust education process through our medical science liaisons to be sure they understand it, their staff understands it. Second, we have huge resources in the company that are made available to the physicians and their folks when they have questions. And then we have a very robust, what we call post-positive support. So for every blood test that our lab does, and we've done, we're over 400,000 now. I think we did 180,000 last year. Any positive test, the ordering provider gets a phone call from one of our medical science liaisons within 24 hours and goes over the results of the test to be sure that the provider understands what it shows, what the
Wait, wait, I'm
diagnosis.
sorry. The medical liaison, like an expert like yourself or somebody, would go discuss it with the doctor or the
Yes,
patient.
no, with the doctor.
Go over the, okay.
Right. And since it's the first of all, Galleri has to be ordered by a physician. It cannot be
Yeah,
ordered,
okay.
right? Cannot be gotten without that. And second, the physician is the one who starts either the referral for the diagnostic process or in some cases initiates the diagnostic process. So the ordering provider gets that phone call to be sure that they understand that it was a positive test. I sort of liken that back to my time in training when I was doing internal medicine at the VA. When you had some positive blood cultures, the infectious disease team came by with a big rubber stamp, red ink, positive blood culture, right on the green chart. So, same thing. We call and say, hey, don't ignore this. Do you have any questions? The what we call the clinical site of origin or the cancer site of origin prediction, what kind of cancer it is, suggests that it's colon cancer, you need to refer the patient for a colonoscopy or suggest that it's lung cancer. CT of the lung is the
Do
first thing to
you
do, that sort of
ever,
thing.
I'm just curious, because what would be really amazing and special about your place, because cancer treatment is so specialized. And as we
Yes.
all know, too, there's some centers that are better or, let's say, more specialized than others. Does your company get involved with anything like that or?
Yes. What we can direct people to are specialists or academic medical centers that we've worked with who have experience with positive Galleri tests. We don't make any recommendations about this doctor being better than that
Yeah, I
doctor or this
understand that,
institution better
but
than that. But institutions are recognizing this. So at Dana-Farber in Boston, they have, for lack of a better term, more colloquial term, I don't know exactly what they call it, an MCED clinic. And they have advertised to the local community, if you have a positive MCED test, come here, we'll do the appropriate diagnostic evaluation
oh, wow.
and we'll facilitate referral. If you look at the Mercy Health System, which is a big system centered in St. Louis, which is multiple community hospitals throughout the Southeast and the central US, they have a centralized system. Any positive test goes back to a team of advanced practice providers who then contact the patient and take all the responsibility for scheduling the appropriate diagnostic tests and appointments with the appropriate specialists. And their turnaround time in terms of resolving whether a positive test is cancer is under 10 days.
That's fantastic.
It is.
That's really
So
fantastic.
if you commit to it and think about it, it's quite easy, actually.
Yeah, I think that's yeah, I think that's what people want. They want to really be directed, when something as upsetting as a cancer diagnosis arises, where to get the best care and to really almost to have like a focal point team leader champion, whatever you want to call it, direct. I mean, sometimes as doctors, we're fortunate. We have our network of friends
Yes,
who
correct.
are reaching out, but the average person would like to have that same high quality
Yes.
type of help and care.
So again, we don't make recommendations about specific physicians or
No,
academic
I know, but you
centers,
give them
but
options or
rely on
choices.
that. We can say, we have worked with individuals at Dana-Farber. There's a similar clinic being set up at UCSF and various other places. And we can say, if you want an organization that has experience with this, go here.
Dr. Klein, as we're finishing up, is there anything else you'd like to add? I mean, you really informed me a lot about this. Is there anything that you'd like the listeners to know more about, the Galleri test and your company, Grail, like what you guys are doing?
Yeah, a couple things. One is we're the only company on the market that has actually tested our product in the intended use population. There are lots of companies out there who have what are called case control studies, where they tested their blood test in individuals who were known to have cancer compared to those who weren't, and estimated what the sensitivity and positive predictive value was. And we did that when we started with, but nobody else in the market has tested their product in more than 250,000 people the way we have, who are ambulatory, not under suspicion of cancer. So our evidence base is far bigger than anybody else's. The second thing that really distinguishes Galleri, as we've touched on, is not only can it detect the presence of cancer, but with better than 90% accuracy, it can tell you where to look. So that the diagnostic evaluations, and we have studied this in our study, are not endless. So if you get a positive test and it suggests that you have, cancer in a certain organ site, you know to look right in that organ site to start with. You're going to be right more than 90% of the time. The false positive rate is exceptionally low. In our last study, it was 0.4%. So fewer than one in 200 people had a positive, had a false positive. And the positive predictive value is very high. And if you have a positive test, it's far more likely than not that you have a cancer. And in fact, if you look at a statistic called the positive likelihood ratio, if you have a positive versus a negative test, you're, almost 100 times more likely to have cancer than if the test were negative. So all of those things are really important.
Okay, well, Dr. Klein, I really appreciate your time. I think that you do make a quite a convincing case that I think the cancer detecting blood tests are ready for prime time.
Great.
And I hope my listeners who, are in that age range and are concerned, discuss this with their doctor, or find a doctor that's doing this type of testing. So thank you for your time
Great.
today.
Thanks for joining me here on UK Health Radio. I'm Dr. Dean Mitchell. If today's conversation was useful to you, please share it with someone who could benefit. You can find every episode of The Smartest Doctor in the Room wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time, stay well.